Happy holidays, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs here on Cracked Sidewalks, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. I'm Joe McCann, along with Phil Bush. In the show today, we're going to talk about Marquette's last two wins, both, again, blowouts over lesser opponents. Look ahead to the next one, which is the last big one in non-conference play against New Mexico, and talk about the athletic director situation. Phil, how are things in Wisconsin?
They're cold, snowy, and I'm trying to figure out what on my resume says I can be an athletic director.
There's not much on mine. I could just say, you know, I've done great things as a GM on, you know, Madden and other video games, like that guy who applied for the North Dakota State football job citing his Madden stats.
Well, that's actually a proven skill set, and then we could mention this podcast.
Well, there's that too, because I just talk and gab and pretend I know things about sports, and maybe that would get me in the mix. We'll
right.
see.
It can't hurt you at this point.
Yeah, it can't hurt. You know, just... No one's been hired yet, so maybe they're still looking for the right person. We'll get to that a little later in the show. First, I want to talk about Marquette's last two wins. And the theme kind of continues in non-conference play, Phil. If the team is CBI quality or worse, Marquette is coming after them, and Marquette is going to destroy them. And that's what happened to IUPUI and Ball State this past week. What jumped out to you in Marquette's two easy wins since our last podcast?
I have to say the continued improvement of Juan Anderson was a big thing that jumped out to me. He was kind of a beast yesterday, especially yesterday being Tuesday, the game against Ball State. He, you know, his stat line was something ridiculous, like 11 points, 6 steals. I'm looking here, 3 assists in 23 minutes, and an ankle injury. So he kind of did it all yesterday. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, I was impressed with Juan as well, especially in the Ball State game. And, you know, in the IUPUI game, he had those 3 three-pointers early,
yep.
Which was, you know, I don't know if that's going to be a sign of things to come or if that was more of an aberration, but still it was nice to see. It's nice to see when anyone on Marquette is hitting outside shots. It would be great if someone would do it consistently, but I'll just take what I can get at this point. One thing that jumped out to me is back-to-back double-digit games from Juan Anderson, Deontay Burton, and Juwan Johnson. And more than that, Juwan Johnson in both games had more minutes than Jake Thomas, as did Deontay Burton. So I think it was great to see those freshmen get minutes and produce from them. And I think maybe this is, you know, Buzz, I think it's pretty obvious that Buzz wants freshmen to earn their place, whether it's on the floor, in practice. I think he wants them to earn their place before he truly trusts them. And he took these two games to just kind of throw Burton and Johnson out there and say, all right, guys, let's show me what you got. I mean, I kind of know what I have with Jake at this point. Show me what you can do. And I think they both, for the most part, took advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Burton's been the attention grabber of late. He's done some, I guess remarkable is maybe too strong of a word, but he's done some eye-catching things with the basketball. See the IUP. All right, this is going to be terrible for me. The
Jaguars.
IUPUI, yeah. That team we beat before Ball State, when he had the coast-to-coast dunk going down the left lane, he's got kind of more of the eye-popping stuff, but with Juwan Johnson having solid minutes and solid performance, he had his bobbled dunk that turned into a reverse layup kind of move that but they both are demonstrating that they've earned the minutes. They're still a little sluggish on defense, but that's why you play these types of games, to get them, you know, opportunities to learn, and I think they're taking advantage of that.
Yeah, Deontay Burton he's getting on SportsCenter probably more than anyone else with his dunks, but he's not doing the Trent Blackledge thing where every bucket he gets in the SportsCenter top 10 and he does really nothing beyond that. But he does have the highlight reel plays. But when you watch Burton, what I love about him is the way he plays in the post. I mean, if he were like 3 or 4 inches taller, I think he could be an elite post player down the road for Marquette. And he still might be, but boy, he's got great post skills for a guy of his size, being a little undersized, you know, for a four. You know, he's about 6'4", 6'5", maybe. But, you know, if he were 6'8", I think we'd be looking at a superstar power forward down the road.
Yeah,
I still think he's going to be a very good player. I just like his moves in the post. He's going to be kind of like Lazar Hayward was, I think, just that undersized post player who's still going to have some guard skills and be able to hit those, 18-foot jumpers.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's going to end up being a bulky three or a short four in his career at Marquette, especially with in the next couple of years where we don't exactly have a lot of depth in the post. He'll be there, but he's kind of the classic now. He hasn't taken it. By all accounts, he can shoot from the outside. So, I mean, he really has three tools when you look at it. He's got the post moves. He's got, obviously, that's what everyone's noticing. He's got the ability to drive and put the ball on the floor. And he's got a mid-range jump shot. So if he's got an outside jump shot, I don't know when you're the other team on defense, I don't know how you necessarily guard him. But, you know, that's maybe the next couple of years. He's going to be very serviceable for us this year, I think, and will only continue to grow as we go through the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think Burton has really kind of established himself as a guy who's going to earn his place offensively, and I think he'll come around defensively. You know, as a lot of freshmen are, he may be a little slow to get where Buzz wants them on that end of the floor, but I think he's doing well enough there to Buzz trusts him to be out there, and he's doing great things offensively that I think he'll only see more and more minutes. He saw 26 against Ball State, and I would look for similar numbers as we get into Big East play with him. But as I mentioned, Juwan Johnson playing more minutes and getting double digits in both games was very encouraging for me. I think he's getting more active on defense. Certainly not an elite defender yet, but I think he's getting to be a better defender. But he does have confidence going to the basket. He's not taking bad shots either. I don't think he's not just going down there and chucking things up and hoping they go in. I mean, he's picking his spots. He's a lot of times going right to the basket, and maybe he'll hit a jump shot every now and then as well.
You know what the big thing for Juwan Johnson is? If you look at his stat line, and again, it's against an inferior opponent, no offense, Ball State. But, you know, if you look at Juwan Johnson's line, he was 4 of 7 shooting. He missed his only three, 4 of 4 from the line. No fouls, and on top of that, you mentioned he played the 25 minutes, had no turnovers. Mm-hmm. He had one turnover.
Yeah, he had one against
one,
Ball State.
One turnover in 25 minutes, and he's attacking the basket. It's not like he's sitting outside taking jump shots. He is attacking the basket, and to have no turnovers one turnover in 25 minutes attacking the basket, I don't care who the opponent is, that's pretty good.
Right. And really, what we said in the last podcast, this is essentially what we wanted to see from these guys in these two games, is guys who maybe weren't contributing as much to get out there and play and show Buzz and the coaching staff what they can do given the opportunity. And I think they did that. So, I mean, kind of mission accomplished for those two games. Really not much more to break down. Now, the next big thing on the schedule is the last significant non-conference game for Marquette, the last chance to get a non-conference win. And suddenly they're going against a New Mexico team that's actually in a similar place as Marquette, because New Mexico, after losing to Kansas, which you would expect on the 14th, they went out and lost to New Mexico State, their rival, at home.
Yeah.
So they're all of a sudden kind of in a situation where they need a good they could probably use a decent non-conference win as well. So I'm glad it's on a neutral floor and not the Pit. But
yeah,
it's a very important opportunity for Marquette to get at least one decent non-conference win, because I think by the end of the season, New Mexico will have a nice record.
Yeah, I agree. And it can only – I mean, their RPI, I think, was 44th in the country, so it can only help our RPI go up. The other thing is, yeah, they're in a similar position, maybe hurting a little bit more than we are, since their losses are a little bit more fresh. But I think the one thing that's also going to be interesting is they have similar strengths and similar weaknesses. Their strength is their front court with Cameron Barstow and Alex Kirk. Those are their two big point scorers, their big rebounders. So it'll be, you know, are we going to see a lot of Oxtool? Is it going to be, you know, a lot of Otule and Gardner going size against size? Are we going to try and finesse them? What are we gonna try and do there? Do you see Derek Wilson being able to drive and penetrate, or how's it all gonna work out? It'll be an interesting matchup amongst the two teams.
Yeah, most of New Mexico's points apparently comes from three people, with
yep.
big man Barstow. Kendall Williams averages almost 20 a game himself, and then Kirk averages 16.5, and then no one else is really over no one else has more than 7 a game for them. Marquette's scoring tends to be balanced. I mean, you're going to expect that Devontae Gardner is probably going to be the go-to guy in big games. It was more spread out the last 2 games because I think that was kind of the game plan going in, was to get guys like Burton and Johnson their shots and see how, and maybe Juan Anderson as well. But I think, you know, in a game like this, certainly when you need a bucket, you're still going to want to go to Gardner. So I think his contributions against New Mexico and how he handles Barstow is going to be important.
Yeah, well, and I think what's going to be interesting, one of the developments or one of the things I've taken away from the last couple of games, and I haven't seen any of the advanced statistics that talks about efficiency and pace, but I do feel like Marquette's really picked up the pace. And Buzz talked about it a little bit on his radio show this evening, Wednesday, which I highly recommend people go and listen to. When you're done listening to this podcast, Don't turn us off to go listen to that. But after you're done listening to this, go listen to that. And Buzz even acknowledged that they've struggled with the pace and the energy of the team in the early season, and now he's starting to feel comfortable with the team getting to the appropriate pace and the appropriate energy level. So I don't think you're going to see necessarily any of the stagnant offense we've seen in the past. We may not necessarily get buckets, but we'll get attempts. And we'll get shots up that are quality shots, and we'll do it quickly against New Mexico. So hopefully that'll balance any, maybe tire out those 3 players that are getting the bulk of their minutes.
Yeah, you know, I would like to think that Marquette is getting closer to being ready for that significant win. You know, it's not like New Mexico is top 5 in the country, but still it would be a nice win to get. But I don't think there's any doubt that after the doom and gloom we were talking after the New Hampshire game, that the team has seen steady improvement, beginning with the Arizona State loss, and then they have been blowing out lesser opponents consistently. They've had 4 lesser opponents since then, taken care of all of them handily, had a game against San Diego State that they probably should have won if a few calls late in the game hadn't gone their way. They played, you know, they only lost by 6 to Wisconsin, but, you know, I think those of us who watched that game knew the game probably was not as close as the score would indicate. But still, they were within a couple buckets of a team that's now in the top 4 in the country with a couple minutes to play. So, you know, that is not a terrible loss, except for the fact that it was to the Badgers.
Right. But it would be worse to have the only thing worse would be to have our fingernails pulled out.
Well, yeah. But as far as RPI and all that stuff goes, losing to Wisconsin is no tragedy. But I think it, as we've said in the past, and, you know, for what it's worth, I don't know if it's really not worth looking at bracketology and all that stuff this early in the season. But for those who are interested in such things, Joe Lunardi threw out an early one this week, said Marquette is in his next 4 out, which is kind of where, you know, we have so much season to play, but that's kind of where I felt Marquette was anyway. No big wins, no terrible losses, so kind of right in the middle of the pack as far as the bubble is concerned. So many opportunities once we get into Big East play to get some decent wins and establish themselves, but I think there's really no question that they have taken steps forward, and as long as they continue to take steps forward, first with this New Mexico game and then going into the New Year's Eve game with Creighton and then on into Big East, the rest of Big East play, there will be opportunities for Marquette to establish itself as a solid tournament team, which I hope they will be.
Yeah, well, I don't want to say that I'm oddly confident, but I feel pretty confident about this New Mexico game, that we will have a very good performance. I think it'll be a good nationally televised game, and Marquette will bring the A game. So I'm feeling a good strong win potential here. Barring injury or something unseen, or someone having a leg broken because of a bad gambling debt, which I would hope would not happen.
Not in Vegas, I would hope.
I would hope not. I think the team will put together a good showing. And you're right, they're going to have more and more time to get better. And one of the things that we don't really take into account as we were deriding how the team was performing. If you think about it, they had some gaps in there, but they were on the road at Arizona State, then they were on the road for the Wooden Classic for 3 days. They were back for a full week right after Thanksgiving, but then had to go on the road at Wisconsin. So there was really no time to really correct any of the major flaws that we had seen. Now they've had a full week. You know, class just ended. Finals were last week, which I think they were done with Tuesday of last week. So they've had 3, 4, 5 days of very solid practice. Now, all teams are going to probably have similar scenarios, but you know, I think this team is only going to improve with that additional focus, and I think we'll see some very positive things coming out of the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. One of those positive things, I wonder if we will see Dwayne Wilson. You know, Bill Raftery got me excited before the game because he said before the Ball State game that he had heard that Dwayne Wilson might play that night. So I was watching all the way to the end hoping he might come off the bench. Not that Bill Raftery would be the official inside source of Marquette basketball, but the fact that he said he heard that got me thinking, oh, maybe we're going to see him. But we didn't. I would highly doubt we would see him against New Mexico unless that game gets bad one way or the other. But, you know, if we're going to see Dwayne Wilson, I would kind of circle that Samford game. It would be a time to get him out there and see if he's going to be able to contribute or not.
Yeah, well, here's the debate I have. Because if, I mean, we carried on about Juwan Johnson and Deontay Burton. And we know ahead of those two, we have 6 quote-unquote starters. You've already got Derek Wilson, Jake Thomas, Jamil Wilson, Juan Anderson, and Chris Otule, plus you got Gardner. So that's 8 solid players. John Dawson's probably 9. He got some minutes. Am I missing anyone out of the kind of the solidly playing rotation?
I mean, if Steve Taylor's healthy, then he would play. But
yeah, and Todd Mayo. I'm missing Todd Mayo.
And Mayo.
So Todd Mayo, that's 9. No, that's 10. Essentially 10 players. I wonder if Dwayne Wilson is going to be able to earn any kind of minutes. He's going to be behind the power curve in terms of experience and practice time. Mm-hmm. I think basically the metric's going to be if he gets into the Samford game, Buzz thinks he can contribute this season. If we don't see him in the Samford game, unless something comes up and he insists on it, I suspect we're looking at a redshirt season.
I would have to agree with that because, you know, it's getting a little late, and like you said, so many guys have gotten experience in the rotation. But kind of my opinion on Dwayne Wilson remains the same. If he makes the team better, he should play,
right?
Whether he's earning minutes or not, you know, whether he's getting starters minutes or significant minutes, if he makes the team better, he should play. Because if he hadn't broken his leg, he would not be redshirting. If
right.
He hadn't had the, you know, so the plan, original plan, was to have him here 4 years, and so I would say move forward with that plan if he's going to help this team win games. You know, he could be the difference with, you know, between, you know, first in the Big East and second in the Big East. Or if he's the difference between being on the bubble and being solidly in, he's absolutely worth playing. But if it's going to be a situation kind of like you alluded to there, where he would be getting walk-on minutes, where he would just be able to barely come in, maybe get a shot up and have people cheer for him, say, great making the comeback, then, yeah, it's a total waste. Then sure, maybe tack another season on the end, redshirt him, and then maybe we get him for 4 full years after this. That's just a determination Buzz is going to have to make. If Buzz and the staff thinks he's good enough to make this team better, and he's going to, whether that means he's taking minutes away from Derek Wilson or Jake Thomas or Todd Mayo or whoever, then yeah, I think you have to strongly consider that. So it's just going to be what Dwayne shows them in practice if he makes this team better right now.
Right. Well, and if you think about it, coming, you know, once he's back, and I'm assuming he did have apparently a bit of the flu earlier, so let's assume he's at 100%. He's really starting at 4th on the depth chart, if you think about it, at the point guard position, because obviously Derek is the starter. Jamil's the number 2 at this point, then John Dawson, and then lastly Dwayne Wilson. So then you could also make the argument, oh, move him to the 2. Well, then he's behind, presumably, Jake Thomas, Juwan Johnson. So he'd maybe be the 3rd, and then behind Todd Mayo. So he'd be the 4th in that rotation at the 2 spot. So unless he's going to supplant and move at least to the 2nd or 3rd spot, which I think is a different way of saying what you're saying, I don't see where he's going to generate minutes unless he is a world-beating talent that just has to be on the court, and then you play him, and that's fine. It's you play him, and you use the conference season to get him ready for the postseason.
I'll say this about the depth chart with regards to Jamil being the number 2 point guard, which he essentially is. That isn't an ideal situation. It's more of an emergency situation because he's not obviously a natural point guard, and you weaken yourself in the front court by putting him there. And if Steve Taylor's not going to play for a while, which appears to be the case, he's almost as likely to redshirt as Dwayne is at this point.
Yeah.
But I would say you are better off leaving Jameel at the 3 and the 4 and bringing Dwayne in as your backup point guard if he is proven to be a better option than John Dawson right now, where who knows what that case is, what how that's working out in practice. No,
it's a fair point, especially and again, I this to make two podcasts in a row, I'm going to go ahead and lament Jameel McKay's decision again, because if he's around, Jameel at the one is it, well, in theory, assuming McKay's got any talent, Jameel at the one is not that big a deal, because then you've got McKay at the four and Steve and Devontae, so you've got and Burton and somewhat of Juan Anderson, so you've got all sorts of options there. Without McKay, then you're right. It makes Jameel either a luxury at the backup one or an emergency situation that you don't necessarily want to get into.
Right. And with regards to what you said about the depth chart at the two, it's almost kind of like the depth chart with regards to talent is opposite of with regards to who is earning the minutes in practice. Because Buzz kind of said on his radio show this week that, you know, starting and minutes are basically earned in practice. And that's why Jake is practicing or starting and playing as much as he is. And whereas, you know, I think everyone knows that, you know, Mayo's a better player, and I would think Dwayne is probably a better player as well when he's 100%. Now, if he's ready, I would think he would be able to supplant Jake as the two guard, and I think he would be a better option there. Now, can he show Buzz that he can contribute on the defensive end? I have no idea, and I think that's going to be something he's going to have to answer here pretty soon before they make a decision about redshirting this year.
Yeah, well, and the nice thing is they don't have to declare red shirts. They don't have to, you know, it's basically if he doesn't play at the end of the season, they apply for the red shirt and they get it. So I think the thing is Buzz is not going to come out and say, hey, Dwayne Wilson is not playing. If as fans, we shouldn't assume that they're going to tell us anything. That's why I think it's going to be telling. If we get to conference play and we haven't seen Dwayne Wilson, I don't think we're going to see him. That's not necessarily as true with Steve Taylor, because Buzz kind of insinuated Taylor needs a couple of weeks to do rehab and reevaluate, and maybe they bring him back if his knee feels good, because it's not a guarantee he would get a medical redshirt at this point. So we'll kind of see, but we're not going to get a clear-cut answer. It's just going to be one day they're either on the court playing or they're not.
Yeah. I will say this. As far as conference play goes and getting started there, obviously the Creighton game is going to be a tough game, but after that with DePaul, Xavier, Seton Hall, Butler, that might be four games. Not that they would be layups by any stretch, but I would think games that Marquette would probably be favored in all four of them.
Right.
And that may be more chances to kind of slowly bring Dwayne along and maybe Steve Taylor if he's going to get going before Marquette goes to Georgetown and then Villanova. So that's when the Big East schedule really cranks up.
Right. Well, and the other thing we have to factor in is, you know, Dwayne Wilson has to have a say in whether he plays or not. I mean, some of that's got to come down to what he and his family's decisions are, right? Does he want to be Dr. O'Toole and stay in school for more years than necessary?
I would guess, not that I've ever spoken to him or, you know, talked to him about it, but I would assume he wants to be out there right now.
Right.
He probably feels he could start, you know, and probably play significant minutes right now.
Right. It depends on what his aspirations are too, right? I mean, you know, if he's thinking, you know, hopefully with a little more success, not to be mean to Vander, but hopefully with a little more, you know, if he's planning, I want to go to the NBA, you know, is he planning to leave a year or two early anyway? So, you know.
I think that's looking way down the road.
Right.
But certainly, like most, like just about any high school player who's top 100, he goes to college saying, I'm going to be in the NBA. So
right.
I would say he probably still has that mindset. And then maybe like a lot of guys who are in the top 100, they get to college and like, man, this is another level. I'm definitely not ready for the NBA yet. And I think then reality sets in and most of them stay 3 or 4 years, aside from the truly elite players.
Right, but I guess what I'm trying to say is if he only plays half a year this year, even if he stays his full 4 years, you know, so that's really 3.5 years,
yeah.
Is he going to be any less ready for the NBA after that 4 years?
Right, yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, to him, it's not a wasted year. To him, he might be thinking, I just want to get out there and start playing and start making freshman mistakes. So, you know, I'll be pick up where I'm supposed to be as a sophomore and then get back on track to where I'm supposed to be.
Right, exactly.
So, but yeah, we'll see, and maybe eventually we will hear from him and if he does get playing time, but we'll deal with that when that comes along. So that's
did you have a prediction for the New Mexico game, by the way?
Sure, let's go crazy. Yeah, I'm going to say Marquette wins. Okay. Oh, I will say Marquette wins. I'll say 68-64.
Oh, okay. You're less generous than I. I think Marquette wins by double digits.
Okay.
I do think the defense is stepping up. The offense is stepping up. I'd go something like 71-60.
All right. I hope we're right.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And I think if they do that, then I think we can head into Big East play very confident that this team is going to make some noise and be right in the mix for the Big East title. Certainly, they're going to be – Villanova looks very strong right now. Georgetown's going to make noise, and I think Creighton will be very tough. I think those would be the three contenders going toe-to-toe with Marquette for the Big East title. St. John's probably be in the mix as well, but we'll see how many tournament teams – I hope the Big East can get five tournament teams.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because the – because they didn't have the conference didn't have a great non-conference showing.
No,
you know, since we only have one team in the top 25, that's going to be, you know, you kind of get those perceptions built. So when the teams are beating up on each other in conference play, you know, can you raise the profile of the conference? But we'll see. Hey, all Marquette has to do is win and beat the teams in front of them, and they'll be fine.
Exactly.
So we'll see.
Get in the dance, then survive in advance, and we'll see what happens from there. But first, just beat New Mexico, and we'll see if that happens on Saturday the 21st. One other bit of Marquette news that was significant in this past week, of course, unless you've been under a rock, you would know that Larry Williams suddenly resigned last week. And so Marquette is now looking for an athletic director again. Bill Cords is in as the interim athletic director. Phil, I mean, this certainly took me off guard. How did you react when you saw that Larry Williams was resigning?
I was initially pretty shocked because, I mean, personally, just some of Larry's moves, I don't know that I was any different than the rest of the fan base. I wasn't necessarily thrilled with some of the decisions Larry made, but I think the critical ones like the Fox Sports 1 and getting the new Big East, if you will, all set up and running, I think was outstanding, and he was a front runner for that. So I thought he had kind of settled into the job, seemed to be kind of just quiet and doing his thing. So I was kind of totally shocked that it happened. And then I sat down and I kind of thought about it. And, you know, he's, for whatever reason, Marquette's making a very broad leadership change at the top. And Larry was part of the previous regime. I mean, because if you think about it, we've got the president, the AD, the provost, the dean of the business school, and one of the critical VPs are all vacant right now.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of leadership positions that send your resumes to Marquette now.
Right. I mean, we could, you know, let's get you, me, and our buddy Stan, and maybe we'll stage a palace coup and take over.
That would be the end of the university.
It would be. That would be the rise of all things evil. But, you know, so there's I have a sneaking suspicion Larry was out maybe as a mutual decision, maybe more of a, hey, Larry, what do you think about maybe moseying on down the road kind of thing, because he was seen as Pilarz's guy. And for whatever reason, Marquette is deciding to go in another direction. What that direction is not clear. But I think they basically said, hey, we're going to start fresh here. See what happens.
And, you know, to echo your points, he did a great job with the whole conference realignment. He was one of the guys who essentially stood up and said, let's stop watching teams leave and let's do something. And so I think taking a leadership role in that regard, he certainly deserves some praise for that. Marquette's fall sports has seen a lot of success in the past 2 years. Not that you would give too much credit to any athletic director for that, especially if he wasn't the one who hired the coaches. I don't think he hired any of the men's, women's soccer coaches or the volleyball coach.
He but did those not.
I don't think he didn't. So he didn't. It's not like he had that much to do with it, but he did have an environment in which those teams saw success. So he at least deserves a slight tip of the cap in that regard. And of course, men's basketball has done well under him. But again, you know, he wasn't the one who hired Buzz Williams, and you know, certainly there was more than enough chatter out there that maybe Larry and Buzz didn't get along, especially if you follow Jeff Goodman on Twitter. He never hesitates to remind people and use that as any excuse why Buzz would take any job from Texas to Minnesota to McNeese State.
Don't forget SMU.
Right, yeah, and SMU, exactly. So the friction was always rumored. I don't know if it was overblown or not. I don't have that much inside information as to their relationship. But I think the exit of Larry Williams, and if there is an athletic director that comes in that Buzz gets along great with, obviously that's a great thing for Marquette, because we would hear less rumors and speculation about Buzz leaving for any job anywhere just because he doesn't like his athletic director.
Right. Well, and let's be honest. Yeah, part of this, you know, and that was, I alluded to, you know, the concerns over some of his moves. His, the kind of the smoke of the, there's an issue between the Williamses, if you will, you know, was one of the things that led me to be concerned. And people go the other direction and say, oh, what, do you want Buzz running the whole thing? No, but there's a way you can bring an AD can come in, a leadership person can come in and successfully run a program in an organization that uses Buzz as their best asset, but is still able to, you know, keep things within parameters. It gets done all the time. It doesn't have to be adversarial, and it doesn't have to be Buzz in charge. So I think that's probably the direction we're going, where it's a collaborative relationship. You know, what's probably going to happen is they're going to hire the new president, if I'm just wildly speculating. They'll hire a new president, and then that president will have, as part of the interview process, will probably have some suggestions made to him or her about what we're looking for in an AD and what we're looking for in these other positions, and then those leadership positions all kind of revolve around the same strategic vision, which I think is a good thing, assuming it's a strong vision.
Yeah, it may be a while before we officially get a new name as far as who the athletic director is going to be. It may be not even until the summer.
That's what I was going to say.
Right. But the name you kind of hear a lot, and you heard his name last time when the job opened up, is Mike Broeker, who is the deputy athletic director. Just go right down the hall there at Marquette and promote him. I don't know the guy personally, but he seems to be very well respected and well liked around the Marquette community as regards to all sports. But he seems, does a great job promoting the school and seems to be a forward thinking guy. And is he the best candidate? I'm not 100% sure. He was passed over last time, but if he is the right guy, I would not be against promoting from within if he's a guy that is going to kind of create the kind of environment that Buzz and all the coaches, really, all the athletic coaches at Marquette would be on board with and be satisfied with.
Well, and you have to believe that obviously Larry Williams was heavily involved in getting the conference set up, but someone like Mike Broeker had to have been involved as well.
Sure.
So he knows the other ADs, knows the other folks. I kind of echo it. I don't know all the ins and outs. I don't know them either. But every person I've ever talked to that would ever seem to know anything about anything has nothing but good, positive things to say about Mike. So I think that would be an interesting hire. Knows the program, obviously, and in theory would, you know, knows Buzz, gets along with him, because Mike's been there since early days of Steve Cottingham's regime, which was the Crean era. So, you know, has been there a while and has established relationships. So it would be interesting to see what comes of it. I don't think we're going to find out till the summer. And like I said, I think we're going to see the president hired before we see anyone else.
Yeah, I agree. I think, Broker's still going to be in his current position to be heavily involved with the teams and assisting Cords as he kind of takes over the interim athletic director role. And I think Cords may be even grooming him for that position and might even, who knows, maybe even might recommend him to the new president. But I think I totally agree with you that the new president is going to probably be the person that hires the athletic director. And we'll just kind of see where the university goes from there. And so,
Yeah.
With what that has to do with Marquette basketball, obviously, you want great leadership at the top, but there's really not much we can do or speculate about, because it's not like we have a wish list of names as far as presidents and vice presidents and athletic directors to go through. But I'm just hopeful that Marquette makes a good hire, because it is, I guess any hire is an important hire, but in today's athletics environment, you know, things are always changing. We think we're done with realignment, but you never know when it may come around again. So you just always want to make sure you have guys in good leadership positions who, if they have to make some kind of hire or make some kind of decision about the program, whether it's moving to a conference or television deals or radio deals or anything like that, you just want to make sure you have the right person in place. So I'm kind of anxious to see where they
are. And let's be honest. I mean, again, whether you believe all internet rumors or whatever, there have been instances where perhaps Buzz has flirted with other teams. You know, so you're either going to have whoever's in these leadership roles next has one of two things on their plate. They're going to have to continually, year after year, fight to keep Buzz here. Maybe that's not the right phrase, but to make sure that we're doing all we can to keep Buzz happy in here. And
that's the best way to put it. Yeah,
and you know, that it's a mutually beneficial relationship. And should the worst happen, either, you know, Buzz finds a better opportunity or whatever, they're going to be the ones selecting the next. Because I would imagine that they're going to be here for the next 5, 6, 10 years, something like that. Right. They're for sure going to be selecting the next coach of Marquette basketball. So it's important to us to have good leadership, not just because, you know, for us, we're alumni, but because as fans of the basketball program, it has a great deal of impact.
Yep. So we'll see what Marquette does. You know, I'm going to just put my faith in the university and hope they make a good hire, and really not much more we can do about it, but just kind of wait and see what happens. But we're more about Marquette basketball, and I'm hopefully remaining more optimistic about the basketball team, and hopefully they're going to get a good win against New Mexico and then take care of business against Samford. Then it's on to Big East play.
Yeah, it's getting close.
Well, as always, we thank you for checking in here on Scrambled Eggs on Crack Sidewalks. Again, I'm Joe McCann on Twitter at JoeMcCann3. Phil is MOOOF23. You can leave comments for us on the Crack Sidewalks page. You can tweet at Crack Sidewalks. We have a Facebook page for Scrambled Eggs as well. Phil, any final thoughts as we head into the holidays?
Nope. Just want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. I think the podcast, Scrambled Eggs, we're going to go on a holiday hiatus here.
This is our fall finale. I think that's the thing now in television. This is our fall finale.
Oh, okay. This is our fall finale because some of us are apparently driving home and can't be bothered to do a podcast over Christmas.
Some people are real stuck up and just want to be with family and, you know, drink.
Yes, spend time with their families and enjoy themselves. I don't understand who those people are, but be that as it may. So this will be the last podcast. But like I said, happy holidays and a Merry Christmas to everyone. And then we'll be back and it'll be good. I'm looking forward to a good win against New Mexico.
All right, everyone. For Phil, I'm Joe. Hope you have a Merry Christmas and hope your holidays are seashells and balloons. Talk to you next time.